Didier un sujet très intéressant, la création au Chili d'un archive d'enregistrement du son dédié à la musique populaire de tout le monde de l'Amérique latine. Now we come to the end of this session dedicated to Latin American music with a talk on the creation in Chile of an archive of sound recordings dedicated to all of the Latin American popular music. Before that, I have three short announcements. One, I'm very sorry to tell you that the following talks, the economics of CD, had to be canceled at the last minute. The speakers could not make it here. So that means you will have some extra time probably to browse through record shops or something before going to the banquet this evening. Second, some people have told me, have asked me why I have insisted to have the introductions in French. And this was not a light decision on my part. It was done in close consultation with two of the organizers of the CAML meeting, Cynthia Livey and Rita Vine. And the whole issue of language is a very sensitive issue in Canada. It's related to a great amount of conflict and many past discriminations. We find a parallel in many other areas. In my own state, California, the whole subject of bilingual education raises terrible passions, pro or against. And we have, of course, you know, the issue of Puerto Rico, or we have the case of Spain with Catalonian. My grandfather was Catalonian. I knew some Catalonian. I knew all of the problems between Spaniards and Catalonians. We have in Belgium, we have in Switzerland, which is a trilingual country. So maybe because I come from Latin America, from that background, I'm extremely aware of these issues of language and how sensitive they can become. And I realized that we are not in the US. We are in for Americans, a foreign country, which officially, legally, is bilingual. A country that each year spends millions and millions of dollars and is doing one of the largest efforts in history to convert this country into a truly, really bilingual society. So as a program chairman, I felt that the very least I could do, and since I have this awareness of language in Latin America, many of us who go to the university, our second language is not English but French. I felt that the least that we could do, not only myself but our organization, is to, as a gesture of courtesy to our various very gracious hosts, to let them know how fully aware we are of this very important issue of language, English and French. And the third announcement, that I'm very sorry to tell you that Juan Pablo González could not make it. He's a PhD candidate at UCLA. He's an outstanding musicologist from Chile. Some of you know him. I think that Jerry Gibson knows him already, and the people of Southern California chapter already are very, very well acquainted with him. He applied for funds to come here. He was very eager to give this presentation, and he was promised that he would be given funds. On the last week, I think it was he sent me a letter, 18th of May. He gets a letter from the Service of American Information, which is connected with the Fulbright. The Fulbright gave him assurances that he would come, but that service that gives that disburses the funds for travel say, no, we cannot grant you the funds, and one of the strong reasons given was that we cannot give funds for travel outside the U.S. to a foreign country. So he was really crushed, and he promised that if possibly he would like to talk about some other subject on the Kansas meeting. So I find myself with a very difficult situation, very ironic, because as a program chairman, I decided that it was unethical for the program chairman to put himself as a speaker. And yet here I'm having to be given the last speak of this conference. And it's ironic, as I said, because I didn't find it ethical, but given that I am from Chile, I'm a very good friend of Juan Pablo González, I know the whole background of Chilean music, I will be forced to give you this talk now. So before leaving, Juan Pablo González gave me a lot of information. We talked for several hours about this, so I think I'm fairly well prepared to give you this talk now on this archive. So I will give you a little background based, as I say, on the first-hand knowledge I have on my own country, my contacts with them, with Juan Pablo and so on. This is an archive of popular Latin American music, especially on 78s. Juan Pablo González became interested in this as a musicologist at the University of Chile, and he wrote a thesis for his master's there in 1982 of nearly 500 pages on the popular music that was heard in Chile in the decade of the 1930s. That's the popular music from every country. It's a magnificent thesis, and some of the people there at UCLA are telling him that he should publish that. That aroused his interest and the interests of many people there in Chile about this. Now, let me make a little departure about what the musical establishment is in a Latin American country, not too different from what it is in Peru, Argentina, or other countries. For many decades, the only music accepted as a legitimate area of research was either the very serious European-type symphonic chamber music or the ethnic music, where you take the Indian and almost like with a microscope you examine from a very technical viewpoint. You say the meter, the rhythm, and you put the notations in a very, very detached, as I say, researching way. And in the meantime, wide areas of music were being totally ignored. That is, the very rich reservoir of popular music and dance that go all the way to the colonial times. The foreign popular music, Latin America as well as European, and also some ethnic music from some immigrant groups, Arabs, Jews, French, and so on. Jazz music was also ignored. Street music was ignored, which is very rich. It's in a way related to the, I think, the klezmerian music of the Jewish tradition. We have a lot of street music in Latin America. And also the avant-garde and electronic music were out. But in the 1960s comes a very interesting new trend all over Latin America. I don't know whether it was the 60s, the famous 60s or whichever, but people start having a new interest in their musical heritage, covering the whole spectrum. First comes to musicology. You begin to see in the periodicals more articles about popular music, military music, jazz music, and so on. Then it goes into performances, and then it goes into recordings. Now, this, as I say, it happened not only in Chile, but all over Latin America, and covers all of the popular genres. And so in 1985, Juan Pablo González, because of his background and his thesis and his interest, was appointed to create, as the first creator, founder, and director, this archive of popular Latin American music center at the University of Chile. So he began traveling. And this is why I'm very sorry he's not here, because we have talked for hours about the incredible stories and anecdotes searching, scouting for old 78s throughout Chile. I will just mention some of the cities that he visited: Rancagua, San Fernando, Curicó, Talca, Chillán, Concepción. Where did he go? He went to flea markets, antique shops, used bookstores,
bookstores is very interesting in Latin America. They always have music. You always find only books, but always also you find scores and recordings, records. Auction houses, radio stations, private collections, whichever. He could write a book with all of the colorful anecdotes about this search. Now, for example, he told me he found many peasants still playing old 78s with the authentic cactus needle that they go up to the hills, up to the mountains, and they get these thick cactus needles and they use them to play those old 78s. Now, after the records are collected, and they have several hundreds now, not a very large collection by any means, by any American or Canadian standard, but for Latin American it's fairly good, especially for that very narrow scope, relatively speaking. They're indexed, and that's a problem because they have very, very few discographic tools there. So the indexes look very, very modest. All what they are able to do is to take the information right off the label. It's very much like the regular Deutsch. It looks very much, and they put them in 3x5 cards, and they have a file cross-referenced by artists and titles and so on. And the equipment that they have is a Presto 64A for playback, with a cartridge and a stylus, Shure SL35C, and the recorder is a Revox PR99, and with a Studer Swiss-made mixer. They have also filters and equalizers, but they try to be as purist as possible. They use very little equalization or filtering when dealing with this record. They still do not have a cleaning machine. That's a big problem they realize they will have to do, take care of very soon. So you can see the equipment is very modest. He was telling me that even though they started just a couple of years ago, they already have aroused a great amount of interest because the musicologists there at both universities, Católica and Chile, are finding that these 78s are a very rich source of seeing how orchestrations were made. At that time in the 78s, longer instrumental introductions and interludes were used, and the lyrics and the stanzas were also much longer. So that they find, they are very enthusiastic about this, they find that it's a very exciting field to go into, and they are full speed ahead going with the collecting now. And as a small sample of what they have collected so far, I have many illustrations he brought for the exchange, I will mention later, a whole reel of tape, 10-inch, with the dubs. I will play you three illustrations of some of the things they have found. You will recognize this right away, El Manicero. But the interesting thing is this is played by a Chilean jazz quintet from that time, from the 1930s, the Osvaldo Norton Quintet of Jazz. It's a local ensemble. This is a typically 1930s jazz version from Latin America. Include, as he said, the bandoneon, which is from Argentina, which in turn came from Germany at the turn of the century. See the speed up. And I said this was a Chilean group. The other illustration, probably you are familiar with the name Astor Piazzolla, who have been very popular lately in jazz circles because he has combined the new tango with jazz. Well, in the 1930s, he was recording, and he recorded in a very, very obscure label, Pampa, Danza Salvaje, Wild Dance. And he sounds so much like Ginastera at that time, like those dancers from Estancia or Panambi, the Ballet Suisse of Ginastera. This is a very short excerpt from this record from the 1930s. It was a popular record, and yet it sounds almost like a classical, avant-garde, serious music. And the final illustration I have is in about 1 minute excerpt of a cueca, which is the national dance of Chile. And this was recorded in early 1940, and it's called Viva la Paz Europea, Long Live the European Peace. And this here you can learn a lot of very interesting things about the historical, social atmosphere of Latin America. Latin America has always looked more to Europe for a spiritual, cultural contact than to the U.S. And at that time, Latin Americans were shocked seeing virtually their spiritual, intellectual parents, France, England, Germany, Italy, engaged in a terrible fight to destroy each other. And they were really shocked, and they were trying to do something to stop the fight, to make them make peace with each other, because we, as I said, we always look to Europe with great admiration. So this is a very telling cueca that has a great social implication. Submarine torpedoes. He mentioned all of the weapons. We all want they to make the peace with each other. We all want peace in Europe. Stop fighting with each other, you fools. Make peace with each other. They're saying there, we embrace each other, the Peru, Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, why don't you imitate us? So this is a very important, very interesting song, and there are many others of this kind. And I would like to finish telling you that this happens in context, the work that Juan Pablo González is doing. There's no, I would not say it's nostalgia in Chile or Argentina, but it's a sort of a coexistence of the old and the new. It's a world that I was talking with Cristobal is kind of vanishing, but still you find a lot of the things in Latin America, this coexistence. For example, there was a very interesting article in the magazine Americas about the deep currents of nostalgia. This happens to be for Buenos Aires, where you can see a horse-drawn carriage, the old photographer, they show there the old statues in the buildings, and it says, these are the sights, sounds, images that the Argentine children grew up with, looking at their past, living in the present and the future. So it's a sort of a continuum of time, which I, unfortunately, I don't find that much in the US. I find it a little more in Canada. And for example, in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, if you go to Buenos Aires, you switch the dial of the radio and you can listen Astor Piazzolla playing the latest recording with jazz, with Duke Ellington or some other jazz ensemble. And then you switch and you hear Libertad Lamarque or Francisco Canaro from the 1940s. So you switch on and you get some songs of Carlos Gardel, who is still one of the greatest idols of Argentina, and yet he died in 1935, more than 50 years ago. And that happens also in Chile very, very much. You find there young people in the streets listening to cassettes, the latest rock music, and people listening in the radio's big band or in the home. They have many houses, they still have the 78 playing the old 78 records. And so this is sort of a continuum. And then in the street, you still see the street organ grinder playing the melodies of the 19th century. So the music, as I remember Bill Mallock saying, it's there. It's just a matter of listening and for the musicologists to go out and rescue that heritage. For example, in Chile, in Santiago, two of the largest stations broadcast, one is Colo Colo. They broadcast every day at 7 p.m. at prime time, 2 hours dedicated only to the very old 78. So the radios still have 78s there. And another radio, Magallanes, has all Sunday evening a DJ dedicated only to old music. So many stations, they still have 78s. And the point that's very interesting is that
people are not listening to this as a sort of a museum piece as we listen. Let's listen to this 1936 version of so and so. They listen them in conjunction. And the third announcement that I'm very sorry to tell you that Juan Pablo González could not make it. He's a PhD candidate at UCLA. He's an outstanding musicologist from Chile. Some of you know him. I think that Jerry Gibson knows him already, and the people of Southern California chapter already are very, very well acquainted with him. He applied for funds to come here. He was very eager to give this presentation, and he was promised that he would be given funds. On the last week, I think it was the, he sent me a letter, 18th of May, he gets a letter from the Service of American Information, which is connected with the Fulbright. The Fulbright gave him assurances that he would come, but that service that gives the, that disburses the funds for travel, say no, we cannot grant you the funds, and one of the strong reasons given was that we cannot give funds for travel outside the U.S. to a foreign country. So he was really crushed, and he promised that if possibly he would like to talk about some other subject on the Kansas meeting. So I find myself with a very difficult situation, very ironic, because as a program chairman, I decided that it was unethical for the program chairman to put himself as a speaker. And yet here, I'm having to be given the last speak of this conference. And it's ironic, as I say, because I didn't find it ethical, but given that I am from Chile, I'm a very good friend of Juan Pablo González, I know the whole background of Chilean music, I will be forced to give you this talk now. So before leaving, Juan Pablo González gave me a lot of information. We talked for several hours about this, so I think I'm fairly well prepared to give you this talk now on this archive. So I will give you a little background based, as I say, on the first-hand knowledge I have on my own country, my contacts with them, with Juan Pablo, and so on. This is an archive of popular Latin American music, especially on 78s. Juan Pablo González became interested in this as a musicologist at the University of Chile, and he wrote a thesis for his master's there in 1982 of nearly 500 pages on the popular music that was heard in Chile in the decade of the 1930s. That's the popular music from every country. It's a magnificent thesis, and some of the people there at UCLA are telling him that he should publish that. That aroused his interest and the interests of many people there in Chile about this. Now, let me make a little departure about what the musical establishment is in a Latin American country, not too different from what it is in Peru, Argentina, or other countries. For many decades, the only music accepted as a legitimate area of research was either the very serious European type symphonic chamber music or the ethnic music, where you take the Indian and almost like with a microscope you examine from a very technical viewpoint. You say the meter, the rhythm, and you put the notations in a very, very detached, as I say, researching way. And in the meantime, wide areas of music were being totally ignored. That is, the very rich reservoir of popular music and dance that go all the way to the colonial times. The foreign popular music, Latin America as well as European, and also some ethnic music from some immigrant groups, Arabs, Jews, French, and so on. Jazz music was also ignored. Street music was ignored, which is very rich. It's in a way related to the, I think, the klezmerin music of the Jewish tradition. We have a lot of street music in Latin America. And also the avant-garde and electronic music were out. But in the 1960s comes a very interesting new trends all over Latin America. I don't know whether it was the 60s, the famous 60s or whichever, but people start having a new interest in their musical heritage, covering the whole spectrum. first comes to musicology. You begin to see in the periodicals more articles about popular music, military music, jazz music, and so on. Then it goes into performances, and then it goes into recordings. Now, this, as I say, it happened not only in Chile, but all over Latin America, and covers all of the popular genres. And so in 1985, Juan Pablo González, because of his background and his thesis and his interest, was appointed to create, as the first creator, founder, and director, this archive of popular Latin American music center at the University of Chile. So he began traveling. And this is why I'm very sorry he's not here, because we have talked for hours about the incredible stories and anecdotes searching, scouting for old 78s throughout Chile. I will just mention some of the cities that he visited: Rancagua, San Fernando, Curicó, Talca, Chillán, Concepción. Where did he go? He went to flea markets, antique shops, used bookstores. Bookstores is very interesting in Latin America. They always have music. You always find only books, but also you find scores and recordings, records. Auction houses, radio stations, private collections, whichever. He could write a book with all of the colorful anecdotes about this search. Now, for example, he told me he found many peasants still playing old 78s with the authentic cactus needles that they go up to the hills, up to the mountains, and they get these thick cactus needles and they use them to play those old 78s. Now, after the records are collected, and they have several hundreds now, not a very large collection by any means, by any American or Canadian standard, but for Latin American it's fairly good, especially for that very narrow scope, relatively speaking. They're indexed. And that's a problem because they have very, very few discographic tools there. So the indexes look very, very modest. All what they are able to do is to take the information right off the label. It's very much like the regular Deutsch. It looks very much. And they put them in 3x5 cards, and they have a file cross-referenced by artists and titles and so on. And the equipment that they have is a Presto 64A for playback with a cartridge and a stylus Shure SL35C, and the recorder is a Revox PR99 and with a Studer Swiss made mixer. They have also filters and equalizers, but they try to be as purist as possible. They use very little equalization or filtering when dealing with this record. They still do not have a cleaning machine. That's a big problem they realize that they will have to take care of very soon. So you can see the equipment is very modest. He was telling me that even though they started just a couple of years ago, they already have aroused a great amount of interest, because the musicologists there at both universities, Católica and Chile, are finding that these 78s are a very rich source of seeing how orchestrations were made. At that time, in the 78s, longer instrumental introductions and interludes were used, and the lyrics and stanzas were also much longer. So they find, they are very enthusiastic about this. They find that it's a very exciting field to go into, and they are full speed ahead going with the collecting now. And as a small sample of what they have collected so far, I have many illustrations he brought for the exchange. I will mention later a whole reel of tape, 10 inch with the dubs. I will play you three illustrations of some of the things they have found. You would recognize this right away, El Manicero. But the interesting thing is this is played by a Chilean jazz quintet from that time, from the 1930s, the Osvaldo Norton Quintet of Jazz. It's a local ensemble. Thank you. This is a typically 1930s jazz version from Latin America. Include, as you say, the bandoneon, which is from Argentina, which in turn came from Germany at the turn of the century. See the speed up. And I said this was a Chilean group. The other illustration, probably you are familiar with the name Astor Piazzolla, who have been very popular lately in jazz circles because he has combined the new tango with jazz. Well, in the 1930s, he was recording, and he recorded in a very, very obscure label, Pampa, Danza Salvaje, Wild Dance. And he sounds so much like Ginastera at that time, like those dancers from Estancia or Panambi, the ballet suite of Ginastera. This is a very short excerpt from this record from the 1930s. It was a popular record, and yet it sounds almost like a classical, avant-garde, serious music. And the final illustration I have is in about 1 minute excerpt of a cueca, which is the national dance of Chile. And it's this was recorded in early 1940, and it's called Viva la Paz Europea, Long Live the European Peace. And this here you can learn a lot of very interesting things about the historical, social atmosphere of Latin America. Latin America has always looked more to Europe for a spiritual, cultural contact than to the US. And at that time, Latin Americans were shocked seeing virtually their spiritual, intellectual parents, France, England, Germany, Italy, engage in a terrible fight to destroy each other. And they were really shocked, and they were trying to do something to stop the fight, to make them make peace with each other. Because we, as I said, we always look to Europe with great admiration. So this is a very telling cueca that has a great social implication. Submarine, torpedoes. He mentioned all of the weapons. We all want to make the peace with each other. We all want peace in Europe. Stop fighting with each other, you fools. Make peace with each other. They're saying there, we embrace each other, the Peru, Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, why don't you imitate us? So this is a very important, very interesting song, and there are many others of this kind. And I would like to finish telling you that this happens in context, the work that Juan Pablo González is doing. I would not say it's nostalgia in Chile or Argentina, but it's a sort of a coexistence of the old and the new. It's a world that I was talking with Cristobal is kind of vanishing, but still you find a lot of the things in Latin America, this coexistence. For example, there was a very interesting article in the magazine Americas about the deep currents of nostalgia. This happens to be for Buenos Aires, where you can see a horse-drawn carriage, the old photographer, they show there the old statues in the buildings, and it says, these are the sights, sounds, images that the Argentine children grow up with, looking at their past, living in the present and the future. So it's a sort of a continuum of time, which unfortunately I don't find that much in the US. I find it a little more in Canada. And for example, in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, if you go to Buenos Aires, you switch the dial of the radio and you can listen Astor Piazzolla playing the latest recording with jazz, with Duke Ellington or some other jazz ensemble, and then you switch and you hear Libertad Lamarque or Francisco Canaro from the 1940s. So you switch on and you get some songs of Carlos Gardel, who is still one of the greatest idols of Argentina, and yet he died in 1935, more than 50 years ago. And that happens also in Chile very, very much. You find there young people in the streets listening to cassettes, the latest rock music, and people listening in the radio's big band or in the home. They have many houses, they still have the 78 playing the old 78 records. And so this is sort of a continuum. And then in the street, you still see the street organ grinder playing the melodies of the 19th century. So the music, as I remember Bill Mallock saying, it's there. It's just a matter of listening and for the musicologists to go out and rescue that heritage. For example, in Chile, in Santiago, two of the largest stations broadcast, one is Colo Colo, they broadcast every day at 7 p.m. at prime time, 2 hours dedicated only to the very old 78. So the radios still have 78s there. And another radio, Magallanes, has all Sunday evening a DJ dedicated only to old music. So many stations, they still have 78s. And the point that's very interesting is that people are not listening to this as a sort of a museum piece as we listen. Let's listen to this 1936 version of so-and-so. They listen to them in conjunction.
After a brief interruption for a tape change, we continue with audio coverage of this session.
I'm very glad to tell you I have concluded an exchange between Chile and the Library of Congress. We began this exchange just last year, and It's a very advantageous exchange for both sides. And as I say, Juan Pablo González in Chile, in a trip he made to Chile, he was instrumental in getting all of the proper signatures, agreements, and so on. Jerry Gibson, I think he's here, was very interested too. He took me to all of the people in the Library of Congress. We have another interview, talk, signing, whichever. And the exchange is going now full force, and we began exchanging mainly classical music. But now, Chileans are so interested that it has been enlarged, and other institutions are kind of jumping into the bandwagon. Why? We are a very poor country. It's very difficult to obtain records. They're very expensive. And here comes the Library of Congress. They have a large collection there of discarded duplicate records, which could be of immense use there in the curricula of both universities and other institutions that I will mention right now. And they are so enthusiastic, they are sending us all of this material. Now, another interesting aspect, I also involved the Chilean diplomatic people through the Chilean consulate. We are sending and bringing these things through diplomatic pouch, which is absolute safe, and it doesn't cost neither them nor us. So some of the other institutions that have jumped into this exchange are, beside the two universities, are the Museum of Pre-Columbian Art, sending ethnic recordings. Also, the type of music that has not been paid too much attention, the military music within Chile has a tremendous tradition, like in many other countries, and I think that if Fred Williams is here, I was talking to him last night about this, he knows quite a bit about this. Two large organizations, the National Band of the National Police, the Orfeón, which is one of the best bands in Latin America, is interested to exchange material, as well as the School of Military Musicians. So there you have exchange going on back and forth now between the Library of Congress and Chile. So all of this material that I'm telling you, avant-garde, classical, folkloric, popular, will be deposited in the Library of Congress. So Juan Pablo and myself have been the sort of the conduits through which these exchanges have been arranged. What about availability of this material? In Chile, we're very, very open. Let me tell you that I was shocked when I came here to this country in the late 50s, and I tried to do some radio programs. The incredible difficulty, now it's much better, especially after the Regular Deutsch and the new copyright law of 1976. But at that time, you could not get absolutely anything. There was a sort of total prohibition to get anything from any sound archives. And in Chile, things are so easy. Anybody can go to the university where they have the archive and say, I would like to hear such and such concert or recording. That is fine. You had to pay a small fee, of course, for the work and for the tape. Okay, and you walk out with a cassette or an open reel tape at that time. I did that many times. Myself and my friends did that all the time. So I came to a different environment. Fortunately, as I say, things are changing now. So we're very open, and both Juan Pablo and I have talked to the people there over the phone and by correspondence, and they're very eager to make these materials available to American libraries, scholars, people who want to listen to that. The only little problem we have, let me tell you a little anecdote to conclude, it's many years ago, somebody said, oh, you are having recordings of Eric Kleiber and so on, and Malcolm Sargent, I would like to get some tapes of this and the other. So I said, okay, write to this man who is my very good friend, he's the Dean of the School of Music. So they were very nice. They sent free of charge some tapes. And I think a couple of years later, somebody called to my attention that some of those concerts had appeared for market in some small label company. And I was very, very upset. The company say, okay, we are making this material available to the public. Yes and no. In the case of out of print records, okay, long ago out of print, I can see the validity of that argument. But when you are dealing with a live concert with rather contemporary conductors and people, and without asking anything or notifying me or them, I found it really unethical. So I don't know how we'll resolve that. I'm going to tell you that some of the things I have received now through diplomatic pouch are the first performance, the first premiere in the continent, in the Western Hemisphere, of Carmina Burana by Karl Orff, 1952, I think, or the Lincoln's portrait of Copland in a Spanish version, magnificent Spanish version. So I'm going to be extend wonderful programs of contemporary music. This is the second one that lasts for 5 days each year in Santiago, of Latin American composers that have to be either world or Chilean premier and high quality. So all of this material is coming to the Library of Congress. We Chileans want the things available to researchers, but certainly we would not like to see that Carmina Burana or Lincoln's portrait suddenly appear in a small label being advertised. How can we do to prevent that? That's a problem I'm gonna have to discuss with the jury. But anyway, it is change that going on, and it's going very well, and this is the end of my talk, and I think the end of the session. Let's have 5 minutes for questions from Cristobal Diaz and from Theodore Bersley, if you want to ask me. So, any questions, comments? They began around the turn of the century. They began first, I wouldn't even like to touch that, Derje, because it's a long, long subject, and I would prefer that you and I discuss that privately, because it's a long subject. But they began around the turn of the century, first importing, you see, the masters and pressing them, and then about the 1920s began the actual recording in Chile with the equipment there. I think it was mid-20s, I think. Yeah. 1917. Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. There's a catalog put out by the RCA in 1930 that's called Musica Latinoamericana, that is aimed to the Latin American market, that has wonderful things apparently recorded. Yeah. Any other question for Cristobal or for Theodore? They do.
I'd love to see them do that with TVs.
Yeah. Do you have any comment, Jerry, about this exchange?
No, it's working pretty well. As far as I'm aware, because you're an even repairing the
crew. Oh, thank you. It will be an ongoing, and I'm pretty sure it will be growing up, and I think it will be a real model for other countries. Any other question for Cristobal? Any other questions? Well, since we don't have any more questions, I think it will be my responsibility as program chairman to declare this conference adjourned for another year. So I hope we'll see each other in Kansas next, I think it's June, Richard? Kansas City. In June, I think, Phil?
June 1 to 3.
Okay. So, week of June, the 1st to the 3rd, thank you very much, all of you, and we'll see you there. Thank you.